If I say King's Home to you, what first comes into your mind?
Honestly, it's something you can't explain. And you'll note just a couple of minutes ago when I was talking about running onto the field. It's a very emotional experience, and it's passed on to you from those players that you've seen treat it with such respect and such honour. And I talk about Jack Folt, Peter Ford. You see, they set the standards. They never ever complained. They got up. Every time I didn't see any bad Gloucester forwards when they put that shirt on. They were bigger men. They were bigger, stronger men. And King's Home is, and do you know, it's the same now. I come here now and I look out and I think, has anyone said to these players today, what they think it is? You know, because you see, they've all got a basic principle when they play for Wasps, Harlequins, or whoever it is, or Canterbury, or Transvaal, or any of these teams around the world. They're going to have the team togetherness, the loyalty to one another, the responsibility to it all. But it seemed to me that the responsibility of Gloucester was a bigger responsibility with the cherry and white. When we play Bristol, the best man from Gloucester and Bristol play for the county. So if anyone tells you I'm good enough, it's this other fella you're playing is in a team instead of you. So it became much more of an importance to you. But in the end, the importance was the jersey and when you went off. And if you lost, God, if you lost. We lost down there once, and Digger came to see me afterwards and getting on the bus, we had a few bins. And it was on the old memorial ground. And I said, well, what do you think, Digger? He said, I'm telling you straight, he said, Pat never ever got on top of theirs. And I wanted an excuse. I wanted him to say, well, you did all right. He said, no. He said, let's face it, he said, our pack never got on top of theirs. We never bossed them. They ran alongside us. They all walked off the field. In other words, we should have, you know, they all walked off the field. No, we didn't deal with any of them. Oh, right. So it just told me how he thought. And he wasn't critical of me, but he wouldn't give me any get outs or grace or well done, kid. He told it as it was. And people like Peter Ford, Jack Folk, they wouldn't say anything. If there was criticism to be made, it hurt them if we lost. It didn't hurt them if they got kicked or somebody tried to deal with them, you know. They get up and deal with that. Yeah. But I've seen Fordy lead us out at Neath, where they had Brian Thomas and all those boys. And we had a number eight called D. Gilbert Smith, a Scottish international. He played once or twice. And he banged into a corner flag when they were wood. And I'd never seen so much blood everywhere. Blood everywhere. It went, you know, I thought, what's going to happen here? And I looked around at our team, they went, we carry him off. No replacement. And I said, then let's get into it. And Fordy had moved. I think he was six, and this kid bloke played eight. Dick Smith was the seven. You know, it didn't matter. We had, all right, move him to so and so, let's get on with it. We played, and no one ever tried to say, well, shall we do it this way, or ref, can it be 5 minutes less? You know, you play with what you had.
Yeah. When you were playing here at King's Home, how conscious were you of the crowd or the shed in particular?
I always felt unworthy. When you're on the field and you're doing the best you can, you go out there and you, for the first 20 minutes, I've been in games where you go 20 minutes, you go, oh, the speed of it, the pace of it, somehow there's been a lot of running in it. You arrive at a line and you go, it's not come for you, you know. But I always think in the first half, you're running on adrenaline and you can go and do it. But when you're dogging it out, we didn't go off at half time, we stayed on the field. So he said a few words, said what we've got to do, put the ball there, we've got the wind against us this half or whatever, or we've got the wind for it, whatever it was, and then you dog it out. Then that Gloucester, you go, oh. I'd be standing there and I think, now, and I don't know, I can't think what it was now, but I always felt I didn't have enough in me to achieve what they wanted. It may have been, I could have been the fittest bloke in the ground, I really can't say that, but I always felt, what else could I be doing? How can we improve this? And Dick Smith had walked down the line, he's captain Dick, and he ran to the end of the line out, Dick. He wasn't only the bloke who ran off the side, he was the fastest man in the team. He you know what that means? And he walked back. And we'd all go, you look at the ground, nobody went around saying, come on, chaps. Yeah. And Dick, he said, he had that great thing about, you see some, too many of them Harlequins, and he used to say to them, they're after you, Claude. Not, come on, chaps. He didn't want the chaps who opened the door and said, after you, Claude. You want the blokes who say, come on, lad. The leader was in front.
Yeah.
And that was the Gloucester forward. The leader was in front. If you ever see anything go off, any Gloucester forward that dealt with life or badly treated, another forward would just see it, note it, move away. We had Ian Robertson, was he was the Cardiff lock, and he was brought in just to, he was the heavy artillery man, and of course when he came here I was the hard boy for dealing with things, and we got down to the Arms Park, we used to play him in those days, and he finished his career with a game against England, and I played in the game in, it was 1974, and Roger Utley played, and he had the ball from a line awake, about to deliver to the scrum half, and he brought his elbow back, and quite by accident he hit Ian Robinson right under the nose and above the lip, and his head went back like that, and Jerry Lewis, who was a chap who used to treat my back for me when I played, he was in Newport, he was the physio for the Welsh team, he come on, he pushed his head back, and I looked up, and there was an eighth of an inch between the top, I can't say in centimetres or whatever it is, but that's what it was. The top of his mouth was separated. He was taken straight off. He had a fracture of the upper jaw. I've never seen an injury like it. But in this particular incident, when we were in Cardiff, and they had Bryn Williams scrum half, and when he didn't play, Gareth played. Barry John was the outside half. Those Williams brothers used to play. They had Frank Wilson, who was a rugby league player. He's a coloured winger who went to I can't remember which rugby league club he went to, but he's very fast, he was, you know. And we're battling away, and no problem here, Robbo said, no problem, boys, leave it to me now, he'll have the ball, see. So he was taunting our pack. So I sort of put myself in a position where I'm going to be able to make sure he doesn't get the ball, and suddenly down he comes on the top of the head, bang, and I've had him. And for a little while, you're taking two steps sideways and two steps forward. And of course, the boys looked round, and I realised what, and I said to Dixon, who done that? He said, him. Because you don't know where it's come from. When you ask a boxer when he's knocked out, he can't tell you where the punch was, a left or a right, or what it was. And anyway, the game went on, and about 2 minutes from the very end, right down in the corner on there, what they call the shed side, the other side from the grandstand, there's Robbo, you see, and we're losing this game, you know, 10 points or something, and I thought, right, I'll just make sure that he remembers me with this sort of whomp, and it was a, you know, I wouldn't say ashamed to say, because at the time that was how it was played, it was a different culture, and it whomp, there's a big swelling under his eye, it immediately came up, and the game's carried on to its conclusion, and we're going off the field, and we all shook hands, and of course Robbo realises he cracked me, but I'm not too sure he realises where that had come from, see, so I shook hands with him, I said, oh, well done, Robbo, he said, it was a good win, I said, cool, I said, a bad eye, I said, who done that? He said, you bloody thing. He said, and I put it in the book. He did. So he knew full well, by the, because I asked. Yeah. Not because he knew.
Some time ago, we interviewed Tommy Oakes, you know, former groundsman here. Yeah. And he told us a nice story about the day that you threw him into the bath that he prepared for you after the game. He seemed to wear that as a badge of honour.
He was thrown in several times. I'll tell you what he used to do. There was a big 6 foot, if you stood up in it, it was probably about 5 feet to the shoulder, something like that. So when we finished the game, we'd soak in it. There was a shower as well and all, but we'd sit there and get that mud off, and you soak in a warm shower. And Tom worked out his time as to when that was going to get cold, or you have to put more water in, or you'd have to fill it up, or he'd go outside and there was a manhole where he had a turnpipe, and he used to pull the plug, and as you were sitting there it emptied, but he used to give us 45 minutes, you know, he was very fair about it. And the end of one season, I think it was, he came in there, said, come on you chaps, out of here. But he used to shout, he was the boss, you know, he used to run the dressing room, he said, come on, you've had enough of it, out you go. And of course a couple of them was on the way up the steps, and one was standing under the shower, and they got him, and he went. But it was to do with the fact that he used to always pull the plug without telling us. But it was part of the camaraderie. He was a big part of the dressing room, Tommy. Yeah, lovely.
Because he was here for quite a few years, wasn't he?
Oh, many years. The family was striped in it. There was Tommy Oakes. All my career he was here, Tom Oakes. And Ivor Oakes, of course, was a local bricklayer who trained us all through the 70s. He was a trainer. He wasn't. He didn't know anything about the body or what would do. He was a bloke who could get the Gloucester pack around the field and tell them who they were and put them in their place and say, "Don't tell me this and don't do that." You know, if you missed something, he'd get me, like, because I was a senior international at the end of my career. He'd say, "Burton, 20 press-ups," and he'd make me do it in front of all the little kids, and which was fair enough, because he was, and they'll think, "Well, if he's doing it, I'll do it." You know, and he'd say to the senior players, "Oi, you know, get down and do that." And if he caught you, you know, the sprints, like John Bayliss was saying, you cheat to just get level, sort of thing. He'd say, "Burton, you took off early then. Now we're having none of that, right? Now you go up there and back on your own, and the others had a breeder." So he treated us like we weren't the great men to him. And then, of course, after the game, if he saw you, Tom didn't drink, but Ivor did. And they'd both be in the clubhouse afterwards, and you could talk to him, and Tom would be, he'd say, sensible.